The AltJet Business Show provides mentoring, inspiration, and invaluable networking opportunities to help turn your vision into reality. Let's build your business empire together.
Welcome, welcome. It's the AltJet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and tonight we've got Ryan Kulk with us. He's the MD of Baldwin Foundation. It's a non-profit corporation, an NPC, and Ryan's going to be talking to us about his experience, and he's got a varied experience in many different areas, and we're going to go through all of what that is. But as you know, on the AltJet Business Show, we start off with a business story, and I'm going to start off with a short little business story that's called The Coffee Shop That Sold No Coffee. So let me tell you the story of what's called the Fired Up Bean, a tiny startup cafe launched by an ambitious guy named Thabo. Thabo had one dream: to run the trendiest coffee shop in the city. He had the Instagram account. He had all the decor. He had earthy music playing. And he had these wooden tables, these ethnic wooden tables, and even some fancy hanging plants. There was only one small issue. Thabo forgot to focus on the coffee. And during the grand opening, people poured in, they took photos, they admired the place, they loved the vibe. But when the coffee arrived, it tasted terrible. Thabo was actually shocked. But he'd never actually let customers try the samples before the launch. He had been so focused on branding, the logos, the lighting, and even the cute plants that he gave names to, that he forgot one thing. And he forgot what the customers were actually coming for. And one day, soon after he opened, an elderly woman named Mama Esther walked in, and she really didn't care about the decor. She didn't even know what Wi-Fi was. She came just for the coffee. And she took one sip of the coffee, looked at Thabo straight in the eye, and said, "My boy, you've built a palace, but you forgot about the kingdom." So Thabo did something very brave. He shut down for 2 weeks and went back to basics. He brought in an expert barista. He sourced better beans. And he did what he didn't do before. He tested and he tasted and he tested and he tasted again and again. And he even let customers sample the new blends and for them to give him the honest feedback. When he reopened, people started coming back. Not for the decor, not for the photos, not even for those hanging plants. They came back for the coffee. And the Fired Up Bean went from this pretty place with awful coffee to this little cafe with world-class flavor. And the lesson is, in business and in life, never confuse the packaging with the actual product. Branding, design, marketing, aesthetics are all very important, but your core offering must deliver actual value. Customers may visit once for the hype, but they actually return for the substance. And that is your AltJet business story for the day. If you're listening to the AltJet Business Show, I'm David Zeidel, and we're about to talk to Ryan Kulk, the MD of the Baldwin Foundation. Ryan's career reads like a masterclass in adaptability, resilience, and strategic growth. Ryan is currently the managing director of the Baldwin Foundation, but his journey to this role has taken him across sport, retail, property, and entrepreneurship. With over 20 years of strategic management experience, Ryan co-founded Interactive Sport while still at university, building it into a successful sports events business. He later moved into the import and distribution space as general manager of Elegant Travel Goods, working with major retailers like Walmart, ShopRite, and Edcon. He then stepped into the role of CEO at Discovery Soccer Park, helping growing one of Africa's largest five-a-side soccer venues, before joining Baldwin Property as regional sales manager for Gauteng and later becoming the national sales manager and ultimately moving into his current role in the foundation. Ryan is also a passionate sportsman, a comrades runner, having just achieved his green number, which you get for completing 10 comrades marathons. Today, we're going to explore the twists and turns of his journey, the lessons from startup to corporate leadership, retrenchment, reinvestment, how to use dashboards, how to be disciplined, and what it really takes to stay motivated through all this change. Ryan, welcome to the show. And I'd like to begin from the beginning of your work experience. How did you get involved in co-founding an interactive sports business?
Good evening, David. Thank you. So, I started out at university looking for a part-time job, hoping to be able to pay for my entertainment beyond university. Unfortunately, my parents couldn't afford to sustain everything that I wanted to do. So, like most people do, I think go out and find something. And I was lucky enough to find a job. I was working at a pharmacy after hours and after university till late in the evening. But also landed up working in a sports business that had started up with three friends, where they were running corporate soccer leagues and a counting football league that I think many of your listeners have probably participated in over the years. And from there, got approached by my then soon-to-be business partner to get involved. And it actually happened on a family trip. Well, I was with friends and they were all together at the Kruger Park, and that's where we met each other for the first time. And when we got back, we connected and started discussing the opportunity and how we could look at doing something like this ourselves.
Fantastic. And so what exactly was the interactive sports stuff? What did you do there, and who was it catering for?
So we started off with corporate leagues, corporate soccer leagues. We started the seven-a-side soccer leagues on grass venues. So we were looking at the corporate market and the corporate entertainment space. And that grew from there into corporate sports events, where we were putting together corporate days for the likes of your Investex and other banks and law firms as team building events and helping them out with those. Not only in the soccer space, we did a couple of cricket days as well, touch rugby and various other sporting events. And also working with the likes of your football clubs like Orlando Pirates, where we created one of the largest corporate soccer tournaments, definitely in the country and probably on the continent, with over 150 soccer teams and companies participating against each other, and there to grow the Orlando Pirates brand itself in the corporate space.
Great. And then you moved on from there. Where did you go to and why did you move?
So I moved from there to Elegant Travel Goods, which is a luggage company that was initially manufacturing luggage before I had joined the company. They started out as a luggage manufacturer. And then when China and India opened up, moved into the import and distribution space. Were for luggage, school bags, sports bags, various types of any types of bags, really. And that was born out of a necessity within the business, where the business couldn't afford two directors full time in the business. And also just the opportunity where it was a family business that was looking for growth and looking for someone to come in and help run the business. The owner's kids mostly overseas, and looking for that opportunity to get someone in to help manage and run the business for them.
And obviously that needed a whole lot of different skills, because now you were doing import and export and changing completely. How did you learn the stuff, and how did you have the confidence to do something completely different?
So it was quite scary, but I think the opportunity to experience China was quite a catching moment for me, really, to see how China works. I mean, everyone sees all the stuff coming in from China, but how does it actually operate and how does it work? So I think within the first month, I'd actually done my first trip to China, to the Canton Fair, where everyone goes and buys there, goes and sees the suppliers and buys all the products and sampling, and touring the factories and spending quite a bit of time in China learning the products and understanding the products. And I was also learning from the owner. I mean, with probably nearly 50 years experience in the game, you don't get a better teacher. So having the openness to learn something new, and understand what's going on in the market. So I spent a lot of time on the road with our reps that were traveling out around the country, and cross borders into the likes of Swaziland and Lesotho and Botswana, and even Zimbabwe, to go and see what's happening out on the road. What are people buying? I mean, you think of you're buying a bag for your kids for school. You just walk into a shop and you buy it. There's so much more that happens beyond that. How does that bag actually get there? The different types of materials, the different types of zips and linings and sizes and all these kind of things. Over and above that, then there's the import and export elements, dealing with shipping companies and distribution companies and couriers. And it was a fantastic learning experience to learn something new. And as I say, for probably the best in the game.
And if you go and you're looking at that, how do you go through and make those decisions? Because you're not just buying one bag. You're buying lots of bags and you're buying many different products. Can you go back and think, what were the things that you looked at that you decided, okay, this is going to work, this is not going to work? Do you have some metrics or some numbers that you use to determine that? Or what I'm really asking maybe, how do you make that decision? Do you have some key things that you look at so that you guarantee or you've got a better chance of it being successful?
So I think a lot of it is about knowledge of the industry and actually understanding the industry for so long. So having worked with the likes of the ShopRites and Checkers and Games and Macros and Walmarts, and understanding their buying and what they're buying. So we spent a lot of time in stores themselves. So going into the stores, seeing what's moving. You also start looking at the data. Data is a very important element that you have to focus on, which I think a lot of people, it's not just about, I think this is going to sell. They think this is going to sell. You have to have a look at it and say, well, I mean, going to the raw data in terms of how many schools are there, how many school children are around, how many bags are there. You're not the only manufacturer around. But you want your product to be A, the best product and at the best price. You've got to look at your market. What type of who's buying your bags? Who can afford those bags? Because if you go to a bag that's that the biggest market is the informal market. And if that market cannot afford your products, you're going to sit with the product. So have a look and see the market in terms of the economy. What does the economy look like? How is the economy growing? Is it growing? Is it not growing? And also having a look back at the history in terms of your past 2, 3, up to even 10 years of data. How many have you sold? How long has your stock sat on the floor for? So when you're buying from and importing, you're not also buying ones and twos, you're buying in the thousands. So you have to actually have a view to take into account how long does it take to actually A, manufacture it. So once you've placed your order, you've got to make payment. How long does it take for that payment to clear? How long does it take for that them to manufacture that product? And how long does it take for the product to actually get here and then clear customs before you can actually put it onto the shelf in the store? So there's all these kind of factors that you have to take into account. We were very manual in that process, which also gave us the opportunity to understand the process a lot better. I mean, that was probably 15, 20 years ago. You're now in a place where all that can be automated. So, but these are all the factors that are taken into account. So automating that process helps a lot because it takes up a lot of time to do these kind of things manually. But you still need to look into that data to make sure that the data is actually correct.
So when you're selling this stuff and you're selling it through big groups like ShopRite and Edcon, do you get a pre-order and then you buy based on that order? Or do you take some risk in saying, okay, I've analyzed the data, as you've said, and I think that the market can sell this amount. And then How do you determine what the price will be? And do you compete purely on price, or are there other factors involved?
So there's a lot of factors involved. I mean, with importing, one of the biggest factors is obviously your exchange rate, and what it's going to cost. Are you obviously buying forward cover at certain points in time and monitoring what's happening on a daily basis in the economy with the rand dollar exchange? And in terms of projections, your retailers also assisting you with their projections. So they project you. They'll never commit to anything. I mean, one of our major retailers, we actually ended up having to build a mezzanine in our warehouse because the stock was arriving and they were drawing down a lot slower than they'd projected. And that's based on the market turn. So we've got to now sit with that stock. So you're holding your stock. There's a holding cost because you're not recouping what you've spent. And then they come back to you with all their different rebates and terms and conditions. And it's a crazy game, and you almost they're almost held ransom to them. But we're in a lucky enough position, and smaller people can get taken out by those kind of guys. So we're in a lucky position to be able to spread our risk across not only the major retailers, but also the independents as well, which are very important. They've got an important space in the market because that's a lot more personalized service. If you go into one of these retailers, you more often than not won't have anyone that's assisting you in the aisles. Whereas you go to an independent, they're assisting you. They know the product very well. And it's in their interest to actually sell the product, the best product, because they won't repeat business.
So very tricky business. As you say, there's so many moving parts with it. And then after that, you moved across and you joined, so I was going to say Discovery, but it's not Discovery itself. It was sponsored by Discovery. It's the soccer parks, the Discovery soccer parks. Just explain how you moved into that and why I moved into that, and kind of, again, made a complete shift from what you were doing. What prompted that?
So while I was at Interactive Sport, we were actually in discussions with the team that were building the soccer park. We never actually managed to get to that point. And it was one of the risks that Interactive Sport was facing was soccer parks of this nature, because Interactive Sport was running the events on grass soccer fields, and you're reliant on venues that you don't own. Whereas especially in the lights of, let's say, raining, grass fields are going to get completely waterlogged and you can't play on them. Whereas a soccer park like the Discovery soccer park, having world-class facilities and top-class drainage, it'll rain and those fields will be able to play on in 30 minutes. So it was a massive risk to us, which we identified as going forward. And when we initially had a discussion, and then one of the partners at the soccer park, our kids were at school together, and we actually were having a discussion one day, I think at a birthday party, and we just got into talking about it. And I suppose looking back at my passion being sport, how I could get back into that industry, and the opportunity presented itself after a couple of discussions, and moved across to help run the park. They'd only had one park at the time, and they wanted to grow the parks in terms of number of parks that we were doing, expanded around the country, also what we were doing at the parks itself.
And do you know how many parks they've got at the moment?
If I'm not mistaken, there's three at the moment. We built, while I was still there, the soccer park at Sandton Sports Club, which resulted in the rejuvenation of the Sandton Sports Club, which was overrun by squatters and all that. So that park and that club is actually thriving with the 11-a-side fields as well, and a nice restaurant and function area. They built a gym there. The tennis club's doing very nicely. And the soccer park has been a major contributor to the rejuvenation and the success of that club. And then there's also one on the rooftop at Mall of Africa, which prior to my leaving, we were in discussions with the mall and to get it going. I left there during the early stages of COVID. Never got to realize and see that growing.
So if we have a look at that example of that one on the roof of, who did you say, which shopping center was it? The Mall of Africa?
Mall of Africa, correct. Yeah.
And if you have a look at that, can you take us through some of the negotiations that one would go through, and or some of, one, the negotiations, two, the considerations that you take into account, again, just to see something, a product like this, what would you look at to almost like not guarantee, but ensure more chance of it being successful?
100%. I mean, one of the major success tick boxes that you're going to look at is location. Because you need a captive market. It's not only a corporate league that runs there, but the other leagues that are running are social as well. So is there a captive market? Is there parking available? Is it secure? I mean, we're living in South Africa, so you're looking at security elements. And where are your patrons going to come from? How are you going to get those people into your facility? In terms of negotiation points, that being on a shopping centre is one of the most difficult conversations, is because a shopping centre charges you for parking, so you're trying to negotiate with them to try and either get free parking or to negotiate some type of parking deal, because it's a win-win for the shopping centre as well, because you're bringing people to the shopping centre that may not necessarily be there. But the other opportunities with the kids coaching, as an example, is where you bring the parents in, they drop the kids in, the kids are being looked after for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it may be, even for a birthday party, and the parents then go shopping in the shopping centre. So the shopping centre is winning as well. So the other considerations are the space. I mean, the shopping centres are inevitably, they want to charge rental for everything that they're getting. So you've got to try and find space that's being unused. So this was an unused, a parking space on the rooftop. And I mean, even now here at Bullwin, we were looking at one point in time, building a paddle facility on the rooftop on the opposite side. So having had that and understanding that, the hardest negotiation with this one specifically was with the architect. Because there's so many considerations. You're loading and you're building a cement base on a parking structure, but your loading is going to be taken into account. Because if you think of, I'm not an engineer, but I would go to them and say, well, you can fit 500 cars on here. If you take the weight of each car, that's going to be much less than a soccer field or a paddle court. And the architects and the engineers are like, well, hang on a second, it's not actually true, because the distribution of a car is actually split over four wheels. Mm. So it's quite shared, whereas a base is just solidly down on the base. I learned a lot from that, which I was able to bring through when we were involved in the paddle discussions as well. So some of these kind of things that you never studied at university that you just pick up and learn. Now I had to use it in two roles, in two separate roles, which has been quite interesting.
And then from there, you then left and you were heading towards working for Bullwin, but you left, is it because of COVID? So COVID, you were one of the work casualties of COVID, is that correct?
Yep, 100%, a COVID casualty, unfortunately. With soccer as a sport as it is, and social distancing being quite difficult when it's a contact sport, probably about a month before COVID lockdown, we actually had almost shut down and come to a complete halt at the soccer park. We had probably close to 50 employees at the time, and a lot of them being coaches, referees, other managers and venue managers and cleaners and restaurant staff. So at the time, we continued. We try to keep engagement with our base. I was running webinars where we were getting professional footballers and having just a web talk with the likes of Jomo Sono, et cetera, and Lucas Radebe. And just chatting about that, our team, having seen what they did in Italy with people doing like warm-ups in their homes and in their flats with toilet paper and cans. And we try to keep our member base active and created some videos, which are really cool. So the guys worked hard. We went into lockdown having a team meeting every day. And eventually this thing just kept going. And unfortunately, being, I suppose, an expensive resource, the board offered me a retrenchment opportunity. And I thought, well, okay. I mean, we've seen what's happened in COVID, and thinking it's going to end quite soon. I actually ended up taking on three separate roles on a consulting basis, and helping with different types of online products. And when I say online products, like IT kind of solutions. And one of those solutions actually was, I pitched it to the team at Bullwin, to a friend of mine who was the financial director at the time. And at the end of the call, he said to me, listen, love the product, but I think We've got an opportunity in that we're looking for a new position as a sales manager for our developments. Would you be interested? And being nearly 8 months of not having an income or not a steady income. So I looked at the opportunity at a listed company that's nearly been around for 30 years that were growing. And I mean, they had one of the best growth rates during the pandemic. So I took the opportunity to join in and kind of join them as a sales manager.
So let me go back. So you were the CEO of the soccer park. COVID hit, things shut down. You then leave the employment because it was difficult. And then you spent kind of 8 months in limbo trying to do various things. And one of those things that you tried leads you to a meeting with Baldwin. And that meeting then leads you to getting a job and doing what you're doing today. Would you look at something like that and say it's fate, or would you say that it's based on your efforts? Because I've heard stories like this before where one thing leads to another. How do you look at that? Is that fate, or is it you putting in the effort and getting the results?
So I think it's a combination of the two, to be quite honest. I think you can sit and wait for something to happen. And everything happens for a reason. So I think by me putting myself out there and trying to make something happen brought about the opportunity with Baldwin. And I think if I just sat down and, I mean, at one point in time, my son got COVID during lockdown, but Baldwin was back at work and I had to work from home for that week. And I was up at 7 o'clock in the morning working after having trained in the morning, and then going out and still working until 7 o'clock at night. Eventually she walked in and she said to me, like, you need to stop. So I think it's just that's who I am. I always want to, I don't wait for things to happen. I think as a personality, I get frustrated. I can't even sit down and sit still. She actually said to me, she thinks I need to move into another bed because I move too much in my sleep. So I'm constantly on the go, and always looking for stuff to do. So I mean, our honeymoon, I couldn't sit still. I eventually had to rent a car and drive somewhere because I was just bored of just lying down and reading books. So I think it's a combination of fate and it's a combination of passion and putting yourself out there, putting yourself out and going out, meeting people. Understanding what are other people doing. I mean, this happened through the security space. It was a product that was in a security thing that I had no knowledge about. I have knowledge about security, but not about actual physical security products. I had to teach myself the IoT products. And I mean, someone said to me, what is IoT? I was like, I haven't got a clue. But I went and I researched it and I learned about it because that was the means to the end. I needed to support my family and I did what I needed to do to make it happen.
So what I'm hearing from you is you're telling people, don't wait for something to come to you. Go and make it happen. And also you've got a positive outlook in that you say no matter what happens, it happens for a reason. And that got you into the role similar to where you are now, although you started as a sales manager, and then now you've moved into looking at or being part of the MD of the Baldwin Foundation. So I want to move into the discussion into that aspect of it and what you've done and how you've done it. Thank you for listening to the Ortjet Business Show. I'm David Zeidel, and we're busy talking to Ryan Kolk, the MD of Baldwin Foundation. And Ryan has discussed the different aspects in his career to get him to where he is at the moment. And some of the things that he says is important is you have to have openness to learn, because he's gone from one aspect to another, but each time had that openness to learn. And if you can get a mentor, for instance, in the luggage business, the owner of the business knew a lot, and Ryan learned from that. Also, when you're looking at the product, it's important to, if you can, own the resources. In other words, before joining the soccer park, he wanted to run soccer events, but in that case, you were reliant on the weather, on other people's facilities. owning the soccer park meant that you could cater if there were heavy rains, you could put things to take place, and you also owned the facilities. And then looking at the different areas, what the key success factors are, obviously, look at the location. Are you in the area where your customers are? Obviously, being in South Africa, is it a secure area? So the added benefit was that if you brought children to the shopping center, the parents were there and they had to wait for the kids for about an hour, and that gave them the shopping time. And all of those things add to the success, and that's what you've shared so far. But also what came through at the end is you got to go out and look for opportunities and do your own bit. But to have the belief that everything happens for a reason, and that means that you've got a positive outlook as you're looking at things. Okay. So, Ryan, going now specifically into Baldwin Properties and the Baldwin Foundation. So you started as a sales manager, and just take us the story through that, and then how did you get into being part of the foundation? What does the foundation do? And I know you've done some innovative things regarding the marketing and related to running. If you can take us through that whole story.
Yeah, perfect. So first of all, my head of marketing might kill you if you call it the Baldwin Foundation.
Sorry.
It's called the Baldwin. No, it's all good. It happens a lot. So Baldwin Properties, largest sectional title developer in South Africa, focusing on 3 and 4 story walk-ups. Been around for this year 30 years. Started out in the south of Johannesburg and expanded now to Johannesburg, Pretoria, Cape Town, and Durban. When I joined them was just coming out of the Discovery Soccer Park and the opportunity to come on board as a regional sales manager, and then moved into the national sales manager. Also worked across the board with all the developments around the country, the sales managers in each region, as well as the sales executives. We have a sales executive per development because of the scale of the developments, where you're looking at over 1,000 apartments per property. So the agents are there specifically selling on that site. So having to manage that team and again, different personalities and all those kind of things. So it was really, really exciting opportunity for me. And during my interview, the CEO and the MD, which was actually just on Zoom because of COVID, they said to me, so how many, they're looking for someone without any experience that they want to bring in on board. What's your experience in properties? I said, well, I own one. He says, okay, perfect. That's all we need. He knew my background in terms of the sport and the passion and that where I'd come from, which then subsequently led into Baldwin Sport being formed with the legendary Barry Holland. We started first thing was a race that we did with Dolphin Coast Riders. Barry used to be at JP, and Baldwin had, through the Baldwin Foundation, which is also turning 10 this year, had one of the events that we used to host annually was a charity walk, where we'd invite all our staff and all our suppliers and partners in the different regions to donate money, and we would go for a walk around suburbs and areas and trails, etc., and then donate some money to the various charities. The walk then progressed from there, and then Barry moved from JP to Bolito, or back where he came from, really. And he did it through a handshake with our CEO, got him to agree to sponsor the race, quite a popular race there. And knowing that I'm a runner, they asked me to get involved in the race and see what it's all about and see how we can leverage our sponsorship better. And went to the first race and saw that Baldwin was branded all over the promenade in Durban, which was fantastic. But I just felt that all we're doing is branding. It's not like we can put our apartments into someone's goodie bag. How do we get all those people that are participating and seeing it to actually touch and feel our product? So being in the sales space, I realized that the only way we were going to sell our properties was by getting people to come into our developments, walk into the show apartments, which are fully furnished, and see what those show apartments actually like and experience the lifestyle that we're building within those developments. So when I was going through the debrief with Barry after the race at our office, my CEO had actually just walked past, and he's got a little bit of a love-hate relationship with Barry. And they called him into the office and said, right, how did it go? So I said, Told them, fantastic, great. I said, told them what we wanted to do, that we wanted to get more people into our developments and leverage the sponsorship better. But I actually want to do this around the country. We've got developments around the country, but let's engage with all those people around our developments. So he agreed to allow me to do four races the following year. But the kicker was, I said to him, but I want you to give me an apartment that I'm going to give away. And he looked at me with like strange looks at like I'm giving away a million-rand apartment. Like, are you mad? And I told him why. I said, we're going to get the people to come into the development, and that's how they're going to get the opportunity to win the apartment. So he always likes trying new things and being a bit out there, and we did it. So we've been running now for the 3rd year. We started initially the Baldwin Sport Marathon Series, which consisted of a marathon in a race in Johannesburg with the Jeppe Club, Dolphin Coast Striders, the Dolphin Coast Marathon in KZN, and the Pretoria Marathon with the Fobens Athletics Club, which actually just took place this last weekend. And the previous weekend, we had the Peninsula Marathon. So we had a popular race that was in each region. And the tick boxes for us was clubs that had popular races that aren't involved in any of the political structures, as comes with, unfortunately, sport and people stealing and all those kind of things. We wanted it to be clean and popular clubs and popular races. But the most important kicker for us was that they're all involved in development and they've all got good development structures, so that we could help the clubs raise money, but also get the people in the races to engage with our product directly. And the way we did that was by giving away this R1 million fully furnished apartment to one lucky runner. So it's not the person who's winning the race. Anyone, whether you've run or walked a 5, 10, 21, or 42, if you've participated and finished the distance, so we're rewarding you for completing a race and getting active. But we're also rewarding you thereafter for visiting our developments. So if you go and visit the show apartment in any one of our developments, you put your details into the iPad in the show apartment. You then get our CRM system picks up that you've participated in a race based on your finishing time from the finish time partner. And we've then picking up and seeing how many people are visiting our developments. So with over 30,000 people having participated in the races in the first 2 years, we had a very limited number of people, just over 500, that actually went to visit our developments. But what was interesting from that is that we had about 12.5% of those people that had visited our developments and engaged with our brand for the first time that actually purchased our apartments after that.
Wow.
So the return on investment from us was fantastic.
So that's a huge move to give a million, kind of, it's basically giving over R1 million away. And so your approach was to get people to touch and feel your product, and then they can see the quality. And you had some criteria that the person has to be in the race. Do you have to run all four races, or is it anybody in any of the races? Were you giving away an apartment in each place or one overall?
So it's one apartment overall. So you've got the entire time period of the race series itself. So it's almost like a year to actually go and visit all the developments. So if you're on holiday and you're from Joburg, you've got a holiday in Cape Town, you can go and visit the developments there and get some more entries. So we've had, I mean, in the 1st year, I was at a trail run that we'd sponsored in KZN. And I literally said to the runners at the beginning of the race, I called up the sponsor to come and say hello and welcome, etc. And I said to the guys, right, who participated in any of the Baldwin Run Series races? And 90% of the people put up their hands. And I said, well, how many of you have been to visit our development? And only about 10 people had put up their hands. I said, well, here's an opportunity for the rest of you to go. And the one lady that was running the race had done a 10-kilometer race in Durban. She went straight from there to the Bonito development and Bonito Hills, and she put her name in the draw, and she's the one who actually won the apartment.
Wow.
So she was one of the people that was drawn. And then how we well, so the person in this last year in 2025, she had visited four developments and run in two races. So how that works is the more races you do, we multiply. So if you've done two races, we multiply your visits by two. So if you've visited four developments and done two races, you get eight entries into the draw. That means your name is in the draw 8 times. And then we use a random number generator. We draw the names out of off that, We picked 20 people, and we've got another radio station that are our radio partners. And on live on air, from those 20 people, we picked 5 people out of a box. And 5 of those people's names then come to the apartment, and we have a live draw where each of them get to choose a key, and they go and open the door, and whoever's key opens the door is the winner.
And the 4 people who are not lucky are left with a useless key.
It's got a key ring on it, so it's nice.
When is the one that's in Belito? When is that particular race?
That's on the 22nd of March, so that's coming up in just under a month's time.
22nd of March. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if it's school holidays because I want to get an entry.
Excellent. You may know someone who can get you one.
I think this is astounding. I think it's an unbelievable opportunity and a different way of looking at things. And in fact, I was talking to someone today who said a great way of doing business is to give somebody a gift, and then people can be engaged. And it might not be just a gift, a useless gift like a keyring or something. It can be something as great as an apartment. And it might not be that you're giving everyone a gift, but you're giving them the promise of maybe a gift. And that's astounding.
Yeah,
Was this
so
something?
I like to call it positive marketing, because it's positive engagement with a positive market that are people that are getting fit, getting healthy, and getting outdoors, as opposed to just sitting down and, I suppose, reading a magazine or watching something on TV. They're actually physically touching the product. So they, I mean, we've gone so far as to giving goodie bags and medals and really enhancing the experience of the runner, not only with their apartments, but in the races themselves. So the races have substantially grown as well.
So, I mean, you can put a pamphlet about a building, but it's when you're standing and walking into the apartment that it really helps. And that's the way that you've done this. Was this something that you'd seen done before, or was it an idea that you came up with?
So I remember sitting in Steve, our CEO's office, and pitching him the idea that I need an apartment, and we're going to get people to visit the developments. And he said to me, "How?" And I said, "I don't know yet, but I'll work it out." And I sat down. This was still before ChatGPT was anything like major. And I sat down and engaged with a couple of clever people that we've got here in the business, and pitched the idea to a few people. And after going through a couple of iterations of how we're going to do it, we actually just simplified the process, because we were going to reward, if you've done a marathon, you get X amount. And for me, it's actually not about people that are running marathons or running 5Ks. In fact, we've actually switched our approach now with the races themselves. And that's why we changed from the Ball and Marathon series to the Ball and Run series, purely because we want to reward people for getting active. So we don't care. Not everyone can run a marathon. Well, not everyone wants to run a marathon, but everyone can do a 5K. One of our ambassadors, her mom came and actually walked her first 5K last year in the JP race. And that was an achievement for her. So I said, based on that, I can go and run a marathon, but someone else might not be able to. But let them go and achieve and do something for themselves and meet a goal. So everyone's got their own limits and restrictions, and we need to reward and recognize that as well.
Wow. And we're running completely out of time here, but just one last question. If you had to choose one lesson that you'd want to teach somebody who says, "I want to be successful," can you think of just the one thing that you'd say, "Do this and you'll enhance your chances of being successful"?
So I think the one motto that I like to live by, and talking through the Baldwin Foundation and really what we're doing in the Baldwin Foundation, is around 3 pillars. Number one is education and training. The second is sports development. And the third is charity and outreach. And I mean, we are going to be changing our name in the next couple of months, purely because we're changing our name to the Beyond Bricks Foundation, because it's not just about Baldwin. Baldwin is our main funder, but we want to give the opportunity to other people to benefit from what and help others. And the one thing I'd like to say is that is to build for others and not just for yourself. If you think about you're going to be selfish in what you're doing, I think your opportunities are limited. And if you go out and do so much more for other people, is especially in a country like South Africa, is to help build your community, help build other people's lives, and improve other people's lives. And we're doing it through healthy living, inclusive sports events across South Africa.
Ryan, thank you so much for that. And for these amazing lessons. And some of those lessons are, first of all, just keep it simple. You're trying to give a reward for something. Keep it simple. Give somebody the reward or the potential chance of reward. And just your final story of doing it for others and not just for yourself. It reminds me of a story of someone said, you walk into a room and if the room is freezing, you've got three choices. You can just walk out, or you can go and get yourself a coat so that now you're warm, or you can build a fire and that fire will warm everybody. And I want to thank you so much for the stories that you've shown and the fact that you're part of the Baldwin Foundation, soon to be, what's it, the BRICS? Beyond BRICS.
Beyond BRICS Foundation.
Beyond BRICS Correct. Foundation. And thank you for sharing your input into this. I'm David Zeidel. This has been the Orchard Business Show, and we've been talking to Ryan Kolk.